Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey Fleck here, along with Shad Marquitz. We're your hosts for this weekend edition, the second one of the year. And I have to say, 2023 is starting off on a little more of a positive note for almost every asset class, maybe outside of energy, that energy just went screaming higher in the beginning half of last year. But potentially a different environment that we are seeing this year. Let's also not all get too excited about any sector because, well, again, everything's been bouncing. And boy, oh boy, do we still hear a lot about a potential recession coming this year. And on top of that, economic data still is not exactly booming. Stuck in, at best, maybe a slow growth environment. Again, that's at best. We are kicking off this show with Jesse Felder, founder and editor of the Felder Report. Now, Jesse, since it's early on in the year, I think it is important to take a step back and look at how investors, whether it's retail, whether it's insiders, whether it's big institutions, how they are positioning themselves early on in the year. Take us through, Jesse, what you look at, different sectors, different data points to get a handle on how investors are positioning themselves broadly, please.
Well, pretty much, I think you can divide things into the quote unquote smart money and the quote unquote dumb money. And, you know, these are terms Wall Street throws around. Smart money is usually right at major turning points, buying, you know, when it's time to buy and selling when it's time to sell. And conversely, the dumb money is doing the exact wrong thing at the wrong time. So, you know, selling at the lows and buying at the highs. And so, you know, there's a variety of ways I think you can look at flows and positioning to kind of see these things. And just in like the Commitment of Traders report, you'd look at like commercial traders, you know, as an example of the smart money, and speculators as an example, and especially small speculators in futures markets as the quote unquote dumb money. And, you know, conversely, we can look at things like ETF flows and which stocks are popular in the market with retail investors would call it kind of fall into that category of dumb money that usually does the wrong thing at the wrong time and is a good contrarian signal. And then on the flip side of that, I look very closely at what corporate insiders are doing on a micro level in individual stocks and on a macro level, because that's usually the smart money. When you see a CFO come in and buy a bunch of stock in the open market, he's usually not doing that because he's bearish on the shares, right? He knows how well his company is doing or not doing and how the stock price either reflects that or doesn't. And so we can use that kind of in aggregate and also, like I said, on a micro level to see how does the smart money positioning relative to stock market, And how does that compare to what retail investors are doing? And I think together, you put all this stuff together and you can get some important signals as to where prices are likely headed.
Well, Jesse, just on that theme, you put out an article recently that said corporate insiders embark on a buyer's strike, talking about just that topic, about how there really isn't a lot of the quote unquote smart money buying into these general equities. But what we are seeing is the retail mobs and even some of the hedge funds flocking back into the stocks that were the most beat up, the tech growth stocks, the ARK Innovations, the Teslas of the world. They're flowing back into those. They've had a nice move over the last couple months, you got to say. But is this a situation where people haven't really learned their lesson about how the duration of this bear market is going to play out? And it does reek a little bit of what things were like initially when things started correcting in the dot-com bubble and people thought, hey, things are at a really good price here. Let's pile back in. Is that how you're reading it?
Yeah, I really think, you know, retail money reflects the classic five stages of grief. You know, this is probably a good way to think about a bear market is as soon as, you know, stocks enter a bear market, investors go into denial. They think it's another chance to buy the dip. And it takes time for prices to, you know, I guess, push investor sentiment through that process from denial to anger to bargaining, depression, and finally acceptance. And acceptance is where you get to the bottom of a bear market where the average investor has said, okay, things are terrible. They're never going to get better ever again. So I need to sell everything. And that's kind of what the bottom of a bear market looks like, is that acceptance of things are terrible. And we're nowhere near to that phase right now, right? I mean, you look at things like Tesla, for example, right? And this Tesla, I think, is a wonderful example of the smart money versus the dumb money. Over the past 12 months, Elon Musk has sold $40 billion worth of stock, right? He knows better than most what Tesla's future looks like over the next year, 2 years, 3 years, whatever, and how the stock price either reflects that or doesn't. Insider selling you cannot always look at as, you know, being directly bearish. Insiders sell for a number of reasons. But when an insider, when a founder, to me, goes and sells the majority of their shares, it's hard to look past that. And it's hard to not infer some type of a bearish message, especially because what we're seeing with Tesla is more and more bad news, right? I mean, they cut prices in China as sales are disappointing. They reported sales that are disappointing. Now they're cutting prices in the US. So they're clearly producing more vehicles than they can sell. And there's a supply demand problem. And this is a company that's already unprofitable. And now they're going to sell cars for even less. So they're going to be facing even steeper losses when investors are expecting the company to, you know, grow sales 50% year over year and generate, you know, tons of profits. At the same time, last week, we saw retail investors pour on Tuesday. This is according to Gunjan Banerjee at the Wall Street Journal. $315 million in one day net inflow into Tesla. The day after on Wednesday, $300 million net inflow into Tesla. Retail flows, record retail flows for Tesla. And Tesla's been the most popular stock among retail investors over the past year. So you have the dumb money, quote unquote, that is extremely bullish on this, which is probably the most, I think, meme stock of all meme stocks, at the same time as insiders are telling you it is not time to be bearish. That message that's a microcosm of what we're seeing on a broader level too, where investors continue to pour record sums into the equity market. 2021, 2022 was almost as big as the year before. Meanwhile, insiders selling was off the charts in 21, continued in 22, and they're still not buying, which to me is different. In 2022, at the bottom, COVID bottom, insiders stepped in to buy heavily. They did at almost every other time was a good time to buy the dip over the past decade. Insiders stepped in to buy heavily. The fact that they're not doing so now is a warning sign.
So, Jesse, it is interesting to see this month, at least early on, halfway through this month, let's say, that tech is actually leading the way out of the U.S. equity markets. Tech, NASDAQ specifically, is up over 5% just in the first couple weeks. Sounds like this is all retail. It sounds like the dumb money moving in. But how long can this last? How long can so-called dumb money carry these markets higher when you do take into account it seems like everything's moving higher?
Yeah, well, it's dumb money and it's also short covering. So both of those things combine to create powerful rallies. But you got to remember, the most powerful rallies happen when? In bear markets. And the reason they happen in bear markets is because the smart money is heavily short. They get squeezed. You know, we have an inflation number that comes out that is, you know, shows that inflation's coming down. It was not an inflation surprise to the upside. It came essentially in line with what markets are pricing in. And so that means the Fed ostensibly doesn't need to get even more hawkish than they are, which inspires short covering, which makes retail investors think that they're on the right track. They pour more money in. But, you know, this is classic bear market activity, in my view, is you have a combination of short covering and retail persistence, you know, retail optimism that works to create these very strong short term rallies. But that's all they are. And if you look at, you know, for other signs of a bottom, major signs of a bottom, they're just not there. And so in terms of the macro fundamentals, in terms of technicals, I'm just not seeing them. And so I think it's important to recognize that this is a kind of classic bear market activity.
Well, Jesse, while we have seen most markets do well over the last few months, I would submit that the action that we've seen in the precious metals is the exact inverse of what we're seeing in the general equities markets, in that it was actually the smart money that was getting positioned at the bottom, the bullion banks, and it was actually a lot of the speculative people that were short at the wrong time. And so they saw a short squeeze because the smart money got positioned correctly and rode this rally up. How are you looking at the smart money versus dumb money in precious metals, which have had a couple of really good months strung back to back?
Yeah, well, I know we talked about this in real time, you know, over the past few months, but back in, you know, October, November, when precious metals were testing their lows and breaking down to new lows, gold, you know, beneath 1700 down almost to 1600, managed money position in the commitment to traders report, which is, you know, the dumb money, got net short gold prices right at the wrong time, which is classic, right? I mean, almost every time, my friend Fred Hickey has been pointing this out for years. Managed money is a wonderful contrarian indicator. At the same time, you saw commercial traders in gold dramatically reduce their net short position. In silver, they actually went net long, which is a really rare buy signal of the smart money getting very, very bullish. I mean, commercials are essentially producers and things, right? And so they are naturally short as they're just hedging their future production. So when they are not selling out that future production, selling forward that future production, it's a sign that they're very, you know, bullish on metals over the short run. And so when we did see commercials in gold reduce their short positions dramatically and in silver get net long, it was a very strong bullish signal from the smartest of the smart money. Now, the thing to pay attention to now is kind of the same thing I'm paying attention to in equity markets, right? While retail investors continue to pour money into equities, they haven't given up yet. They have not even begun to take an interest in the gold price. I mean, gold is up $300 in the last, since, you know, early November, in just a couple of months' time. And still retail hasn't started putting money into ETFs. So these ETF flows, I think, are an important signal that I've paid close attention to. And until we see retail money really pour in, you know, there's no sign of excess optimism in precious metals. So it tells me that, you know, the gold price can really has some potential for strength during this kind of seasonally bullish period we're in right now, as retail investors start recognizing, oh, wow, I need to own some precious metals here. And their flows into ETFs are usually a very good driver of, you know, intermediate term trends. And so just like we saw from the 2018 to 2020 period, inflows into ETFs really powered that strong move higher. I think we could be on the brink of another such episode.
Jesse, what do you think's moving the underlying gold stocks then? Because you look at GDX, GDXJ, off of those lows 3+ months ago, those are up 50%. So is that retail money coming in? Still understanding it's on low volume, but could that be where the retail money is filtering to?
You know, I haven't seen any evidence of it, but that doesn't mean it's not happening. I mean, absolutely, it could be, you know, retail messages buying the miners. But traditionally, what we've, you know, the best measure of retail activity has been the ETFs of, you know, just gold ETFs, precious metals ETFs. And the fact that we're not seeing it there tells me that, you know, these mining stocks, you know, I probably still have, you know, if retail is going to come into the space and push the you know, the metals higher, metals prices higher, they're probably going to push the mining stocks much higher too. I mean, these a lot of these miners got so incredibly cheap that this is probably just a reflection of, you know, what the metals done is that, oh, wait, you know, gold's not going to go back to 1,000 an ounce, which is what a lot of these stocks look like they are pricing in, is, you know, gold going back to 1,100, 1,200. The fact that that's not happening means, oh, okay, we need to reprice these things for even just, you know, a sustainable 1,800 to 2,000, you know, gold price. Now, if the gold price does what I think it's going to do, which is, you know, going to break out to new highs sometime over the next, you know, this year and next, then the mining stocks have tons of upside.
Well, Jesse, in addition to looking at where the buyers are coming from the smart money and dumb money, I think it should also be noted that about 80% of trading is now machine trading, algo trading. And so there's not even people, there's not carbon-based life forms doing this. And they're keyed very much off of interest rates and currencies. And if we look at last year, it was really a story of rising interest rates and the dollar went on a huge move higher. Well, that's all rolled over the last quarter of last year, which was responsible for a lot of how this trading played out in the fourth quarter, and it's continued into this year. How do you see interest rates and the dollar setting up for 2023? Because that's such a huge factor in how these algos are keyed.
Yeah. Well, you know, to come bring it back to positioning in the futures markets, there's a huge net short position in the bond market across the curve. Traders are essentially betting, you know, they're all in on the, you know, rising interest rates trade. They, you know, think 10-year, 5-year, everything's going much higher. Now, that type of crowded positioning among speculators, when you get, you know, that type of extreme crowding, to me, it's a point that it points to a potential for reversal, right? And it's astounding to me that we've already seen the 10-year, you know, treasury yield, you know, come down from almost from 430 to almost 330. We're down almost 100 basis points on the 10-year, and still they're massively short. So I think there's room for rates to come down in the short term, that if we are heading into recession, you know, things like the copper to gold ratio point to a 2.5% as, you know, roughly fair value on the 10-year right now. So if you get some short covering in the bond market, and that would come in reaction to more signs of a slowing economy, then you could get a real shift in positioning there that could drive a strong rally in bonds. Now, that would be also obviously, you know, bullish for precious metals, right? Because at 350 on the 10-year, and we just got a CPI report yesterday of, you know, 650, you know, your negative real yield of 300 basis points. So negative real interest rates are typically very bullish for precious metals. They haven't been because the Fed has been tightening at the short end over the past, you know, year or so. That was the headwind for precious metals. Now that that's abating and the Fed is going to reduce its pace to 25 basis points next month and maybe raise another 25, that headwind to precious metals is going away. And the timing of this is interesting to me, too. It's almost exactly the same as we saw in 2018, where precious metals bottomed about, you know, 3 to 6 months before the Fed ended its rate hike campaign. So, you know, a lot of these things, you know, bond market, Fed policy, and extreme positioning in bonds are also potentially bullish catalysts for precious metals over the next couple of quarters.
So, Jesse, something you said at the very start of this interview was how you look at some of this positioning and how when insiders are buying or selling, it can signify major turning points. Are we at a major turning point? Did that major turning point happen last year? Did it happen at the tail end of 2021? Or is it still ahead of us?
Well, there was a major turning point. I think it's probably, you know, it should be obvious to everybody by now that the insider selling that we saw in 2021, right? Previous peaks, I measure insider selling on a 12-week kind of rolling basis because that incorporates an entire quarter. And there's seasonal effects that go on with insider selling. They're not, you know, blackout windows and whatnot. So as long as you're looking at it as an entire quarter, you kind of can take those out. But in the past, you know, insider selling peaks were around $20 billion for a 12-week period. Well, insider selling in that fourth quarter of 2021 was nearly triple any previous peak. It's just literally off the charts. That is not only insider activity is not only a good predictor of stock prices over the next 1 to 2 years, it's a good predictor of the economy over the next 1 to 2 years. So that insider selling is actually a good predictor of ISM about 2 years in advance. So I think that turning point, that huge amount of selling, was insiders saying, this is as good as it gets. It's not going to get anywhere near this for the next couple of years. And so that peak in stock prices, that has ramifications for the next 2 years. It plays out until towards the end of this year. I think we could see some type of, you know, economic bottoming for earnings, for the economy, for stock prices sometime in the second half of this year, until insiders start buying heavily again and we see capitulation on the part of retail investors. We're just not there yet.
Jesse, another question I have is about if there is a new normal forming, because everybody wants things to go back to the way they were before the pandemic. That's likely not going to happen. But when you look at across the board, the way people are measuring things, whether it's PE ratios and earnings, as you mentioned, whether it's what they consider normal for inflation now. For a long time, everybody was hoping we could get to 1 or 2%. Well, not everybody, but the Fed was. And now inflation expectations are far more embedded at higher levels. Even though it's moderating some, people are still expecting it to stay higher than it was for years. And when people look at things like interest rates, or when they just look across the board, it seems like most of the expectations are changing into a new normal. How do you see that setting up for how the markets are going to perform once the central banks quit tinkering here in a couple months and they get to that period where they just pause? What is the new normal going to look like?
We all know inflation has peaked and has been coming down for months now. The question is, how far does it come down? And I really do think the stock market, the only way the stock market, we're having a major stock market, you know, bottom right now, is if inflation does come back to the pre-pandemic, post-GFC idea of normal, which is, you know, below 2%, a level that allows the Fed to print money, support asset prices, and that doesn't result in inflation in the real economy, right? That is the normal markets have become used to over the past 12, 13 years. Now, even if we just go back to the pre-Great Financial Crisis normal, right? Look at what was inflation from 1990 to 2007-8, you know, before the financial crisis. It averaged about 3%. So even if we just go back to that pre-GFC normal, right, that would be a shock to markets that are expecting inflation to come back down and average 2 or below. And I also think there's a good chance that inflation is even more persistent than it was from that 1990 to 2006, you know, 7 period, that, you know, it could average above 3%. There are a lot of structural forces that we could get into. But I mean, essentially, it's geopolitics. The Cold War, you know, with China means a lot more military spending. It means deglobalization of supply chains. There's also just, you know, domestic politics. And James McIntosh wrote a great piece on this in the Wall Street Journal this week. Domestic politics, right? The federal government has decided, you know, it can borrow and spend as much as it wants, right? We can forgive student loans. We can, you know, create budgets that are 10,000 pages long that not one congressperson has read, and the president has no power to line item veto or anything. So spending is out of control. And I mean, we have a 5% deficit right now in a boom, in an economic boom. I mean, that is such a horrendous fiscal performance that it's going to be problematic. Even Bill Dudley, former New York Fed head, has said he expects we're going to have some type of fiscal problems this year we're going to run into. And then you have, you know, what I mentioned, geopolitics, domestic politics, and demographics, right? The aging of societies means there's a smaller workforce relative to the overall population. That puts pressure on wages in a structural way. That's not just the opening of the pandemic, not just printing money. We don't have enough workers to support the overall economy. That means wages are going to be higher. So there are a lot of things pointing to inflation being, you know, coming back down and resting at a level closer to 4%. And that would represent a huge shock to what's priced into stocks, what's priced into things like inflation swaps and break evens and all those kinds of things. And so markets could be, you know, surprised by inflation over the next several quarters.
Yeah, what a different world we are in. Last year, boy, oh boy, was a wake up call to a lot of people. And this year, just interesting to see how optimistic, I guess, investors are to start this year. You even looked at Bitcoin. Bitcoin's almost back to 20,000, and it started this year about 16,500. So again, a lot of money's been put to work early on this year without a big change in the landscape, other than the Fed will be slowing, but we knew they were going to be slowing. But inflation is still remaining high. Interest rates seem like they're going to remain high. Very different than what we've seen in the years past. Jesse, thank you as always for your time. Great chatting with you. We'll chat again with you next month. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend.
Thanks, guys. Good to talk with you.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.